Lake Effect Weekend continues on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. David Letterman retired earlier this week after more than 30 years as a late-night TV talk show host. Leading up to this week, many of the stories about Letterman's career pointed to his skill at deconstructing the very concept he was a part of.
But it was another host that often gets credit for truly hosting the untalk show, Talk Show. Craig Ferguson left his role as host of The Late Late Show at the end of last year. It was a program that showcased Ferguson's creative and entirely offbeat sense of humor, but also his skill as an honest conversationalist. He won a Peabody Award for his interview with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and he won praise for an episode in which he eulogized his late father.
Ferguson was born in Scotland, but became an American citizen. He wrote about that process in a memoir, and it also figures into his stand-up comedy work, which brings him to Milwaukee in the coming week for a show at the Riverside Theater next Saturday. Ahead of that, we reached Craig Ferguson by phone. Craig Ferguson, it is so nice to talk to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak to you too, Mitch. And may I say your haircut, your new haircut, looks sensational.
It is a radical change from the last 36 other haircuts I have had.
Well, you know, when you're a guy and you get a haircut that you're comfortable with, you kind of stick with it. I've had the same haircut since I was about 14.
I discovered recently that I still have the same hairbrush that I bought when I was 18, and it is not getting a lot of use anymore.
Oh, come on. Don't worry. I'm sure there are other parts of your body that are much hairier now that you've gotten a bit older. Use it to comb your chest or your butt.
Well, at the risk of asking you a legitimate question, you were coming to Milwaukee as part of your stand-up tour, and I know you did stand-up throughout your run on late-night TV, and now you have this game show, and you're working on a sitcom pilot, you write, and you do voice work. Does stand-up scratch a different itch than working in all these other areas, or are they all variations on the same itch?
Yes and no. Here's the thing. It's kind of like if you're a piano player and you go from town to town playing a piano, that's what stand-up is. It's the instrument. You know, it's the thing that I play. It's what I do. It's what I learned on. It's what I began, and it's kind of what I am. The other things are like playing with different bands or an orchestra. So, you know, it's still the same instrument, but it's a different type of, you know, it's a different type of setup. Well, you know, what I, in its purest form, what I do is stand-up comedy. You know, I mean, that's what I do. You know, if I'm writing, it's kind of a version of that because I hear it in my head. If I'm, you know, but if I'm working in a, you know, in an acting environment and there's other players involved, you got to listen to what other people are doing and take that into account. So it's kind of, it's like being a musician. You know, you're playing alone, you're playing with other people.
Well, and when you're playing with other people and when you're playing in front of people, you get this kind of instant feedback. Do you find that buoys you in some way?
Well, I certainly react to it and feed off of it. I mean, you know, part of what the job is when you're a stand-up is reading the room, reading the crowd, seeing how it's going, making whatever changes need to be made in order for them not to join together as one and hang you. So that's really what you have to do is you have to be, you know, careful not to, you know, piss everybody off, but tread the line, you know, just right. So it's an instinctive, kind of organic thing to stand up, you know, and it kind of goes both ways. A good crowd will get a good show, and you know, you get what you put in, I guess.
How long does it take you to suss out a crowd?
Usually I can do it before I go on. You know, I can listen to them with a warm-up guy and go, okay, this is going to be work, or, oh, I can relax here. These people are crazy. So you can usually tell just by listening. You can almost tell by the noise they make when the lights in the theater go down. You know, it gets to a point. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time now. So you get a kind of feel for it very quickly. Not that a good or a bad audience is really that. I mean, you know, it's just about, you know, what energy is it going to require? What am I going to do? How, you know, what's the energy like in the room? That's what you can tell right away.
Now, you do not seem like the kind of guy who would be okay with the only difference between, say, Milwaukee and Indianapolis being the difference between brands of energy bars in the green room. When you're going from one place to another on a tour like this, how plugged in can you be to the places that you're going?
Well, it depends on, you know, really it depends on the timing. I mean, if I get there, you know, the day before, which usually happens, then, you know, you talk to the concierge in the hotel, you go to the local place near the hotel, there's always something about. You get a bit of a feel for the town pretty quick. Also, it's not my first time I've been to Milwaukee. I've been there before. In fact, I hesitate to say it, but the beer that made you guys famous, et cetera, et cetera. So you kind of get to know it. Plus, I've been touring for a long time. Many of the cities I've been to before. You know, I'm kind of get you get a feel for them. You know what you're going back to.
And you have been to Milwaukee before. Do you feel any trappings of, I mean, there are people who have made the comparison that Milwaukee and Glasgow are not all that spiritually different.
No, I have to say. Of course, Glasgow is not, you know, picturesquely placed on the shores of Lake Oprah, but it is still, they're not the similar town.
I was just wondering, do you connect with an audience differently in a place like Milwaukee than you would do in a place like Las Vegas?
Well, audiences in Las Vegas are very different because they're not from Las Vegas. People are from out of town. And, you know, the difference is if I play in Milwaukee, you know, most people are at home at the end of the show. Most people are coming to see me in Milwaukee are coming to see me. You know, if somebody comes to see you in Vegas, no matter who you are, you think, well, we're in Vegas, what do you want to do? As opposed to, oh, that guy's playing there, let's get a babysitter and go see him, or, no, I hate that guy, let's stay home. You know, why would we go out? We have Netflix. You know, all of that stuff, it's a different feel. I think you connect more with audiences if you're in their hometown, for sure.
Well, and in Las Vegas, the hour and a half they spend with you might be the only hour and a half that they are not losing money.
Well, that actually, that works to your advantage. It's the only time they know they're going to be safe.
You are an American citizen now, something that you have written and talked about a lot. How does that affect your observer status? Do you go from the point where the states are a place where you just live and work to the point where you're really able to use the terms us and we, that you have this American-ness in common with your audience?
I think I've had that for a while now. I think a lot of the feel that I get when I mean, I only play in America and Canada anyway. That's the only place I do stand. I don't think I'm seen, I don't see myself as a fish out of water, and I don't think I'm seen as that. My observations tend to be more on a behavioral and a human scale than they are on, you know, people in America do this, people in Europe do that. I feel like I kind of meandered past that a while ago. Just because it's not the way I think, you know. My wife is American, my kids are American. Everything about my life is, you know, I live and work here. My observations are made here. I exist here. So, and I don't do stand up back in Scotland. I haven't for 20 years.
At the same time, I mean, given that your story has these elements of the American dream to it, you also do still have this place that you left behind. Can you watch what is going on in Scotland today with a sense of detachment, or is there still part of you that thinks that this is still a part of me?
Oh, I think it's very much still part of me. I think anyone who has, in most cases in America nowadays, I guess a parent or a grandparent who is, you know, who is an immigrant, but most Americans have contact with an immigrant at some point. And I think that, you know, you always still think, I mean, I still think of the old country as, you know, it's where I'm from. It's my... You know, in the same place, if you leave Milwaukee and go and live in Los Angeles, you're still going to follow what's going on in Milwaukee. You know, it doesn't leave you, it doesn't stop being part of you. So I'm still Scottish and I'm still American. You know, it's kind of like, yes, I observe it with, I suppose, a little detachment in the sense that I don't follow it every day. But when there's, you know, we're having the referendum or the big political stuff that's going on in Scotland, I keep an eye on it. I look at it for sure.
Is there a sense, I mean, do you have a sense of pride about this kind of Scottish ascendancy, if you will?
I'm very proud of how political the people in Scotland are. I think that's a real, I think many people throughout the world, you know, that the Scottish people are very invested in their own democratic process. The turnout to the elections is very high. You know, an actual, you know, disturbance or, you know, or any kind of intimidation or anything that's not dialogue or not discussion is very, very low. They, you know, they really participate vigorously in the democratic process, and that is, in fact, very American.
One of the traits that people say they admire in you is, when they're talking about you anyway, is your ability to be, or at least seem to be, authentic when you are doing stand-up or in any of the other things you do. Do you get to a point in your career where you're more comfortable being that authentic person, or do you get to that point in your career because you've been that authentic person?
Gosh, I think that it probably happens around about the same time. I think that, you know, very early on, doing stand-up, you know, I think I was very kind of, hey, don't you, you know, everyone has their own take, and that's what gets you forward. I think that, you know, as you get older, though, I've always equated it to the scene in Shawshank Redemption. You know, when, you know, in the movie where Morgan Freeman's trying to get parole, and he's always inventing, you know, saying to them what a great guy he's going to be and what's going to do, and he keeps getting denied parole. And then towards the end of the movie, he says, look, you do what you do. I don't care. This is who I am. This is the, you know, this is what it is. This is the story. If you can like it or not like it, I don't care. And he genuinely doesn't care. And they give him parole. And I think that's kind of the parallel story with me. I think early on I was very keen to have everybody like me, you know, because I'm a young performer, and very quickly or reasonably quickly I realized that the very act of performing, some people are not going to like you, and that's fine, and I don't care. And you know, it was something I think used to be of some exasperation to the folks at CBS when I would say, hey, if you don't like it, you know, those other channels, hit the button. I don't care. And I didn't, and I don't. You know, if you want to watch something else, if you want to go see somebody else, that's fine. I'm not affected by that. If you want to come and see me, I'm very grateful and happy that you do, and you'll get the best I can do. But I'm not going to try and talk you into liking me. You either do or you don't, I guess.
Well, and so when you think about the Craig Ferguson who was really trying to make people like him those many years ago, you know, you're playing in a rock band. Is it all surreal to look at where you and Peter Capaldi were 30 years ago and see where the trajectories have taken you?
Life is, I think age has a very surreal quality to it. You know, just aging is a very odd and spooky process, because it does start to look very strange and odd, and I can't believe that happened, and it's kind of like a movie. You know, when you mentioned, you know, Peter Capaldi and I were in band together when we were young, and now he plays the Doctor in Doctor Who, and, you know, it's such an odd, it's an odd little journey, but it's kind of fun. If you've ever listened to The Planet Suite by Holt,
oh yeah,
you know, which I'm sure you have, that one of the more ethereal and odd pieces of music is Saturn, the bringer of old age. And if you listen to it, it's a very odd, discordant, you know, kind of not really a melody, but just a kind of like shifting, odd series of chords. And I think that that's a very authentic study of the aging process. It's bizarre.
and somewhat more bizarre than the concept of jollity. Which I think is
jollity,
Jupiter, right?
yeah. Jollity is a slightly less complex series of notes to be hit. Yeah.
Well, so given that, is it at all awkward now when people ask you who your favorite doctor is?
Not really, because I can say personally or as the doctor, and then the answer is both. Peter Capaldi, because he's my friend, and because he's my favorite doctor.
Oh, well, good. Very diplomatic of you.
Yeah, it's almost like I've been asked that question before.
Do you miss interviewing people?
No, not at all. I have conversations every day. I don't think I interviewed anyone, to be honest. I was never really interested interviewing anyone. I was very interested in talking to people, but I'm not a journalist. You know, I never have been. I have no interest in being in a journalist. Not that there's anything against it, but that's just not my thing. So, you know, I was never, you know, I'm not an interviewer. I'm a person that's capable of holding a conversation with any, you know, reasonable or sometimes not even reasonable human beings. But I'm not a journalist. I'm not an interviewer, and so I don't miss it. I can still continue to interact in my life much the same way as I did when I was having paid conversations on television.
So you feel like you're still doing kind of the same thing, it's just not being televised.
Yeah, I mean, look, doing the late night show was fun, but I have not for a second regretted the decision to not do it anymore. It was a long time doing the same thing, and I think if I'm really honest, I probably stayed at that then a couple of years too long. But it's hard to, you know, it's hard to leave when, you know, it's hard to leave a comfortable place like that. But it was time.
You did bring a lot of people a lot of jollity, if you will.
Well, I'm very happy about that, and I don't intend to not do that anymore. I just don't want to, you know, drive to the same place every day and do the same thing every day. I can't really get behind that as a way of life.
Well, I appreciate that that you've taken the time out to share just at least part of your way of life, and we're thrilled to have you come back to Milwaukee.
I'm looking forward to getting back there, and in fact, will not be cold when I'm not there this time.
Well, Craig Ferguson, it really has been a delight. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, man. Speak to you soon.
Comedian, actor, and writer Craig Ferguson will perform at Milwaukee's Riverside Theater next Saturday evening. He ended a 10-year run as host of The Late Late Show on CBS last December. More recently, he's host of a game show called The Celebrity Name Game and is working on the pilot of a sitcom. He's also author of a memoir called American on Purpose and a novel as well. And in tribute to his thoughts about old age having a lot to do with Gustav Holst's The Planets and Saturn the Bringer of Old Age, we leave you with this surreal moment.
While we do that and take another break, Radio Chipstone will come your way next on Lake Effect. Our Curator's Choice series continues when Lake Effect Weekend returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.